they sign peace treaties may or may not be friendly
right.
to Israel. That's
right.
the situation we're looking at.
Right.
And today, the Palestinians are not being threatened with extinction, but I would say the state of Israel is. Do the Israelis still have that concept? Because it's not evident in the evening talkies coming around here.
I think that they do, and I certainly believe from my experience that those who bear the burden of protecting the Israeli people, the Jewish nation, live every day with the concern that one mistake, one error of judgment or intelligence gathering could really lead to Israel being wiped off the face of the planet. Not through the Palestinian crisis, but through weapons of mass destruction. And that's, you know, I try to give that feel and that sense to people who read The Last Jihad, who don't have to turn to some long, dusty history book about the Middle East, but they pick up the history as they're reading this political thriller. But yes, that is a very real feeling, especially when you have to, you know, prepare to make sure your 2-, 3-, 4-year-old children can get their gas masks on in case poison gas comes in. That, what a terrifying way to live. It was terrifying enough for my wife and I and our 3 kids to deal with sniper crisis here in the northern Virginia area. I mean, this is what Israelis live with every day, and that's not half as bad as Saddam firing missiles with weapons of mass destruction on them. And I try to convey that sense in The Last Jihad. I'll let others be the judge of how well I accomplish that, but that is what they're living through right now, and it's terrifying.
Your own interest in this, in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
obviously you have a mixed background.
Yes.
How, I noticed there were a few scriptural things sneaking into the
mm-hmm.
into the text periodically. It's like when I read Malachi Martin's book, Windswept House,
mm.
and I said it's one of the few novels I ever read with a highlighter, because if you understood, he was communicating a lot to you in code, if you just understood,
mm-hmm.
very
mm-hmm.
much like Umberto Eco in The Name of the Rose or
mm-hmm.
Foucault's
mm-hmm.
Pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
So what were your own interests in writing this?
Well, again, as an evangelical Christian, again, I'm from an Orthodox Jewish background, and I think that spiritual perspective is one that often is neglected when you think about, when people think about
good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. For Liberty, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us today, this evening, Dr. James Wardner, who is a dentist. He lives in Florida, and he's written two great books. One of them is The Planned Destruction of America, and the other is Unholy Alliances. Now, hopefully, very, very shortly, we will have the last of the Planned Destruction of America books on hand. And, of course, we just got in a case of Unholy Alliances because, of course, this is one of the most fascinating books. And I will have to admit that I've been studying what's going on in the world for 40 years. I guess I first read James's book, three or four years ago. And it wasn't until then that it suddenly became apparent why the Supreme Court took God and the prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. It wasn't until then that I realized that the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court from 1941 until 1971. And over that 30-year period, the Masons were in total control of the legal process, the interpretations of the Constitution. And of course, the purpose of Masonry is to, has always been, to change America from a Christian society to a secular society. In fact, if you look on the back of the dollar bill, the emblem there has Masonic connotations, the pyramid cap on the all-seeing eye, and the caption beneath, Novus Ordo Seclorum, the new secular order. That's what it's all about. America was to become a secular society, and then, of course, the next step was into the pagan or occult, which, of course, is the foundation of Masonry, even though an awful lot of Masons don't understand that. So I'm indebted to Dr. Hurst, but Dr. Wardner for really an excellent, excellent book. That's called Unholy Alliance, and there's so much other good information there. James, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, of course, you started out, though, going through your first book, The Planned Destruction of America, thinking that the major culprit was the Council on Foreign Relations. Why don't you pick up and sort of tell our listeners the sort of evolution of your thought?
Well, it all started with the, astounding knowledge that the Federal Reserve Bank is a private bank. And as I began to really pound through all kinds of information, books, research, articles, publications, I discovered that this organization called the Council on Foreign Relations basically runs America, and the 3,000 or so individuals that make up the Council on Foreign Relations are always tied into, or if not members themselves, if presidents, vice presidents, secretaries of defense, so on and so forth, all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And to think that we are changing governments, if you will, by voting is unfortunately at this point in time, and actually has been for many, many years, decades in fact, if not centuries, virtually ridiculous. And I listened to a talk show here that we get in Florida, and it's absolutely shocking for me to hear basically a Christian Rush Limbaugh talk show wherein we hear that if we got more Republicans in power, more to the liking of people like President George Bush, we would have developed a new society, a godly society, which is completely erroneous because the same people who put this president and his coterie in power are the same people who put his father in power, who put Bill Clinton in power, who put all the presidents who came before him in power, and really nothing is changing. And then as I did my research regarding the Council on Foreign Relations, this little issue of Freemasonry kept stepping into the picture. But as I was knee-deep in what I thought to be earth-shaking information all by itself, I didn't feel like I'd dare touch Freemasonry and just drop the word in the planned destruction of America. So I felt like that would perhaps be something I could tackle in and of itself. And that's what happened in Unholy Alliances. And as I delved into the subject of Freemasonry, the theocracy, if you will, of Freemasonry, the ongoing battle for centuries between the Catholic Church and Freemasonry, between even the Lutheran Church and Freemasonry. I had to take on the objective understanding that this is something bigger than life. And lo and behold, it turns out that the Federal Reserve Bank was loaded with Freemasons, that the directors of the corporations loaded with Freemasons, the heads of our religious organizations in this country are Freemasons. Basically, we have a Masonic country. We have a Masonic, I shouldn't say theocracy, but I don't really know what the somebody that understands Webster better than I might call it, a plutocracy or something, where all gods are equal. And this is where George Bush and his comrades are coming with this interfaith business. We all have to accept one another as people of God, the Muslims, the Jews, the pagans, the Buddhists, the Hindus, the Catholics, the Protestants, the communists, those in witchcraft, everybody, all can be one big happy family under God's umbrella, which to those of us who understand that Christ died on the cross for our sins is pure putrid.
Poppycock, or whatever you want to call
poppycock.
It. Of course, you know, the trouble is that, I think most people get started. Of course, when I got started, 40 years ago, the enemy was communism.
Right.
And then, of course, the enemy was the great tax-exempt foundations.
Right.
Then the enemy was the Council on Foreign Relations. But always that lingering question in the back of my mind, there's an X factor, and I don't understand it. But, of course, I think our listeners have to understand that many of the so-called anti-communist organizations were set up to tell you half the story, but never to tell you the full story.
Right.
And, of course, it is the most amazing thing to me that none of our religious leaders who we look to for guidance will ever get up and mention the Masonic influence at the highest echelons of our government. They will never talk about the Masonic conspiracy and its origins from the mystery religions of antiquity. They'll never talk about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. And of course, these are the people we look to for leadership and for sources of information. And if Christian television and Christian radio and Christian leaders won't tell us, and certainly the conservative organizations, so many of them out there, and they always want your money, and they, we're gonna save the Panama Canal, or we're gonna save the children, that the issue is abortion, or the issue is homosexuality, or and they've always got an issue to talk about, to focus our attention on, but of course, what's really behind this whole thing is not even as much masonry, but evil. And I think that this is really what's so hard for people to understand, is that there really is evil in the world. And the founders of masonry, not the average mason, doesn't understand masonry. He's simply a pawn in this whole game. But certainly the leaders of masonry do. And they openly write about the Luciferian initiations and similar things, and the frank worship of Lucifer. But you see, the average Christian today, since the church quit talking about Lucifer, and we took even any mention of Lucifer out of the Bible, and you'll only find it in the King James Version in Isaiah. What is it, Isaiah 14? You probably know better than I do. But, Lucifer no longer exists, and Satan really is not a real factor in this whole thing. And we don't really believe in hell and damnation. And, well, of course, the Bible's fine. It's got a lot of great stories in it. But, and of course, that's but, which, of course, tends to undermine the traditional gospel. And I remember, of course, reading Jonathan Edwards, A Sinner in the Hands of an Angry God. And, of course, talking about the flames of hell. We just don't do that anymore because it doesn't sell well. And so in the name of selling Christianity, we've compromised the gospel.
You know, if I could just touch upon one thing that I think is of ultimate interest, especially to those of your listeners who tap into other talk shows. Regarding the Federal Reserve Bank, it's common knowledge, it's common knowledge within the groups of people who understand that there is a conspiracy in this country, that the Federal Reserve is a private bank. But what most people don't get or don't want to go to is that Senator Robert L. Owen, who drafted the Federal Reserve Act, was a Mason. Senator Nelson Aldrich, who was involved in the Aldrich Bill and the planning of the Federal Reserve Act, was also a Mason. Senator Carter Glass, who was chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee and co-sponsored the Glass-Owens Act of 1913, which created the Federal Reserve System, was a Mason. The Secretary of the Treasury, William McAdoo, who was first chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, was a Mason. The Secretary of Agriculture, Edwin Meredith, who was director of the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank, was a Mason. So if we go back to the founding of the money system, which developed in this country sort of a malignant power wherein it could basically purchase politicians, purchase the media, purchase television and control it, we can see that everything today is completely controlled. And then going up to the United Nations Charter, the United Nations Charter was written by Council on Foreign Relations members, many of whom I'm sure are Masons, although I can't name who is and who is not. But the Council on Foreign Relations, as an organization, promotes socialism, internationalism, which is another word for socialism, all over the world. Proof positive that this president is essentially a socialist is how he constantly subverts this nation to the umbrella government of the United Nations Charter. And what the United Nations has to say about Iraq, what the United Nations has to say about whatever country they're talking about in the news media at any given time, on any given day. If they want to plan a war in Iraq, it doesn't matter whether Saddam Hussein has a pea shooter, nuclear arms, biotechnical warfare, or what, they're going to have a war because they can plan it and prepare our nation for it just through the headlines in the media. And it would look as if they're doing a fine, good job. Secondly, Alger Hiss and Harry Dexter White, I'm sure you know this, two well-known identified communists, were also instrumental through the Council on Foreign Relations in the formation of the United Nations. So we've got the banking system of the United States controlled by Freemasonry, the corporations controlled by Freemasonry, the government controlled by Freemasonry, our courts, our justice system, our lawyers completely controlled by Freemasonry, our schools are up to their ears in Freemasonry, and everything that they teach in the school system is Masonic, both in style and in religion. And in Unholy Alliances, as you know, I have many quotes from various leaders of the country, including presidents, who promote the National Education Association as enlightening, if you will, quote-unquote, enlightening our children to the understanding that we all need to become world citizens, not nationalists, not lovers of our country, lovers of the Constitution, but lovers of internationalism, which is feigned language for lovers of communism.
All right. And, of course, the major question is, how does it all fit together? And, of course, you were talking about the Federal Reserve System. And, of course, the current monetary system of fractional reserve banking is a basic foundation of our monetary system, and it's a vehicle by which you can create money out of nothing. It's the greatest scam in the world. If you have money in the bank, you know that it's not, everybody's not going to come in all at one time to get the money back. So you begin lending out money you don't have, then drawing interest on it. And of course, the way our fractional reserve system works, the banks or nearly can lend up to 10 times of their actual reserve. They only keep a fraction of what they have on reserve. And then, of course, if there's somebody that's run on the bank, why, all the other banks pitch in money so that the one bank doesn't get hurt, or they have the FDIC there to supposedly protect them. Of course, if there was a real panic, the FDIC doesn't have more than maybe a fraction of a percentage, after the first couple of runs, why, there wouldn't be any more money in the banks, and there wouldn't be any more money in the FDIC, and then what would you do? But people don't understand this whole idea really goes back to the Knights Templar. And the Knights Templar are one of the forerunners of the whole Masonic movement. In fact, when you go through the various rituals of Freemasonry, at least in the Scottish Rite, perhaps in the York Rite as well, but in the Scottish Rite, one of the steps, one of the various degrees is the degree of the Knights Templar. So I'm certain you've probably gone into the relationship between the Templars and modern-day banking.
Well, yeah, you know, the Templars, I think, started out, like many organizations, they started out in the goal, the objective of doing something good, became infiltrated again, and there was some pretty hoary stuff going on within the organization, and the King of France, I believe it was, and I don't remember the name of the Pope, decided that they had to disband this organization because it was so filthy from the inside out. And that's what they did, and they had them chased all over Europe. And of course, there's still questions as to where they ended up. Some people believe they ended up in Scotland, and out of them, the Freemasonry moved from Scotland to England. And you know, it's all undercover secrecy from that point on. But you know, what's really interesting is to again hear people who would have us think that our nation is somewhat objective in its thinking, that we have two different races of men running with opposing sides.
You mean the Democrats and the Republicans, conservatives, and liberals, sure.
Yeah, because, you know, the fact of the matter is that the men who control both organizations are Freemasons. And Freemasonry put out a four-volume booklet naming individuals from A to Z, 10,000 individuals, as a matter of fact. And if you go through that book with any kind of definition, and again, you're not going to find it in the library.
You can't even buy that today. I've tried repeatedly to buy that, and all the copies have been burned. You know, you have a copy, and there are a few copies out there with conservatives, but you can go up on the Internet, try to find it, and no way, Jose. Because they don't want the American people or anybody else to know really of their influence.
Well, that's it. I'm sure that's true, and we've talked about that. I've talked about this a number of times on various radio shows, and I'm sure that they've gotten wind of that. But the fact of the matter is, whether you vote for a Democrat or a Republican, you know, it would appear that there's been a stranglehold on the political system virtually most of this nation's years. I mean, going all the way back until the early 1800s, into the 1830s, there were even investigations in Philadelphia and Massachusetts and other states wherein, where does the power that controls this state government come from? And here we have now today patriots, and I don't... I mean, I'm for them, I'm not against them, but they're saying that we need to keep the power in the hands of state government, not federal government. Little do they apparently know that since the 1830s, the power of the state government has been in the hands of Freemasonry. And the only thing that's changed now over 150 years or so is the fact that all of this power has been congealed into one great, big, ugly, monstrous, malignant mass of evil. And it's all over our country, and its head is in Washington, D.C. and in New York.
Of course, you're speaking of there at the House of the Temple there in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
All right. And for our listeners out there, I mean, here in California, I mean, the last gubernatorial election this was the most ridiculous election I've ever seen. I mean, where could you get a candidate as bad as Bill Simon, who would really not bring up any of the real issues as far as Gray Davis is concerned? He knew there was going to be a $35 million deficit. Why didn't he bring that up? Why didn't he bring up, the corruption as far as the electricity crisis was concerned? In fact, why did he come out, try to get the support of the homosexuals? Why would a Republican run as bad a campaign as he did unintentionally? Here's a guy that really had hardly ever voted for the Republicans. He wasn't even ordinarily voting on a regular basis. He had never done anything at all within the party. He is a good friend of Reardon, who's a liberal Republican. In fact, they go to church together. They play golf together. And the two of them team up in the primary to defeat Bill Jones, who was a real honest-to-goodness conservative. And then, of course, it doesn't really matter who wins, you know, because they're going to throw the election. And they threw this election. I mean, you know, Gray Davis was so vulnerable. But, of course, who really controls the Republican Party? Why, the liberals sent from Washington, D.C., a fellow named Parsky, another fellow named Firestone, and they bought up all the central committees around the state, and an awful lot of good Republicans got the brochures that showed Howard Jarvis there backing the current candidates for central committees. Jarvis has been dead for years. I don't know how many of you got those flyers. They spent literally millions of dollars to take over the Republican Party to lose. Because they wanted Gray Davis in for another session. And this is the sort of thing that happens all across the country. And until people understand and get involved, it's going to continue happening. And the great tragedy is, of course, the average person has no idea, as Bill says, both parties controlled by the same liberal forces, all of them wanting ever bigger government and more control of our lives.
You know, out of the September 11th, which was a sad day for America, of course, came a book called From the Ashes. I just happened to be walking through a bookstore, and I noticed From the Ashes, it said a spiritual response to the attack on America, and I thought, okay, this is something I've got to take a look at. So within the confines of this book speaks His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, a profound socialist, Rabbi David Wolpe, a Jew who was Antichrist, T.D. Jakes, who was a joke, Iman Khan, who I don't know who he is, Teek Han, who I don't know who he is, Neil Walsh, who I don't know who he is either, never heard of him, Chuck Colson, Marianne Williamson, a certain socialist and occultist, Michael Wolff, don't know who he is, Cardinal Avery Dulles, a very liberal, pseudo-Catholic cardinal, and Starhawk, who you probably know is a politically active witch and high priestess in a major witch coven.
Now, why would a dedicated Christian be on a panel there and, of course, presenting the Christian point of view with a witch?
Well, I have a quote from Starhawk in my book on Holy Alliances. She says, "We need to create a religion of heretics who refuse to toe any ideological lines or give their allegiance to any doctrines of exclusivity." And you see, this is, and by the way, Billy Graham is in the list as well.
Oh, Billy Graham is there.
Yeah. And then there's a interfaith statement by a Dr. Robert Edgar. And if Dr. Robert Edgar is a member of the National Council of Churches. It was the National Council of Churches which many, many years ago demanded that the word God be changed to our Father and our Mother. What these people are capable of doing is diabolical scenarios out of which, if you will, from the ashes, just like the title of the book, they create the answer to which they have made the problem. From the ashes, a spiritual response to the attack on America. So all of the heretical antichrist demons of the world now jump on a spiritual campaign to destroy the religion of Christ and to tempt, if you will, in the same way that Satan tempted Christ after his 40-day fast, to tempt those who belong to Christ to begin to believe that which they believe need have no ideological line, they need have no allegiance to any doctrine of exclusivity, and that they can go arm in arm, elbow to elbow, with Buddhists, Hinduists, Satanists, members of witchcraft, Jews, and whatever else is out there.
Don't forget the Mohammedans.
Of course.
And, you know, when we start taking the Mohammedans into the White House to pray and, you know, into the National Cathedral to pray, and I have nothing against it. I think that a Mohammedan has a right to his prayer, but to say that we all worship the same God, is true sacrilegious and a violation of any Christian tenet. certainly the Jew and the Christian share a common belief in God. They're waiting for the Messiah to come, and we're waiting for him to come again. But we certainly, the Jew and the Christian, do not worship the God that the Muslim or the Dalai Lama or a Starhawk or any of these others worship. But the great tragedy is, of course, you talk about from the ashes. That is a fascinating concept. And when we get back here, I'll want to go into that in a great deal more detail. Well, no, actually, we're going to wait, and we'll do the break at the half hour. Let's talk a little bit about from the ashes. There is, of course, a tradition in mythology that there was a bird that went into the ashes and burned up. It was called the Phoenix. And, of course, it rose again from the ashes and was reconstituted. Now, when they first made the Great Seal of the United States, on the front of the Great Seal, they put a bird, and it was a phoenix. Through the years, of course, they figured that the Americans might possibly fall to what this was all about, that the Great Seal of the United States was, well, I think, created in 1782, something like that. And, of course, on the back of the Great Seal was the pyramid, capped by the all-seeing eye, and the people who put them there were, frankly, occultists. But, of course, they eventually had to change the phoenix, which represented coming back from the ashes, really was the whole idea of the reconstitution of lost Atlantis. That's what America was to be, according to the occultists. And, of course, what actually transpired was that they eventually changed it just a little bit at a time to the point where it became the eagle that we see on the back of the dollar bill now. But did you know that that was originally a phoenix?
Yes.
But the average American doesn't. They don't understand how these occultists work behind the scenes and, of course, how they ridicule us because we're so dumb we can't understand what they're doing or their power. Because they always work, of course, within the shadows. They cannot stand the exposure of light. And yet they're there, and they're working at the highest levels of our nation. They even have a statue there in Washington, D.C., of Albert Pike, right in front of the Justice Department. Here's a man who, of course, when he was a Confederate general and allowed the Indians to scalp white prisoners and kill them, slaughter them, a man who formed the Ku Klux Klan. And yet, of course, his statue was in front of the Justice Department today. Where's Jesse Jackson when you need him? Well, of course, he's a 33rd degree Mason, yeah. And, of course, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So he gets a get-out-of-jail-free card, when he's got all these tax-exempt organizations, and he's funneling money there to his mistress so she won't expose him. And he's using tax-exempt money to do it. Does he ever pay it back? Is he ever sent to jail for... Well, I think they sent Jimmy Baker to jail for 40 years, for what he did. They let him out, of course, much sooner than that. But why is it that Jesse Jackson can get away with that sort of thing, but that a Christian minister, who certainly should have been punished for what he did, was nowhere near as bad as what Jesse Jackson was doing?
Right, and they have no respect for blacks whatsoever. That's why they created their own... The blacks have their own lodge, because they're not going to mix in with the... super race whites that are controlling this whole thing.
We're going to go to a break here. When we get back, we'll welcome your calls here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And certainly Dr. Wardner is one of the most best informed people on the Masonic movement in the country today. We'll look forward to your calls. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will be interested in helping us as we reach out across America now every week on approximately 50 radio stations from sea to shining sea, and of course, quite frankly, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing. So if you believe that there really is a spiritual battle taking place today, if you feel that certainly the churches are not speaking out on this, that the reason we're in the trouble that we are today is that we seem to be spending all of our time fighting one another instead of fighting the common enemy, that there really are secret societies out there, that they do have an emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and nobody will demand that that be taken off. And when they look at the caption, One Nation Under God, above those occult symbols on the back of the dollar bill, they're not talking about the God of the Bible, but the great architect of the universe, Satan himself. Well, we hope that many of you out there will decide you want to join the Radio Liberty family. And of course, if you'd like to, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, our November newsletter deals with what's happening in our country and, of course, the coming economic collapse. And we are facing an economic collapse. And we'll be, my December newsletter is going to go into that in great detail. And, of course, you're not being told the truth at all about what's really going on. In fact, one of the reasons why I think they're so anxious to get into this war in Iraq is very simply for that reason. Now, when things fall apart, they're going to be able to blame, well, the wicked Saddam Hussein, or maybe the wicked Osama bin Laden, or maybe both the wicked Osama bin Laden and the wicked Saddam Hussein for the terrible things that are going to happen here. And, of course, the fact that they've got to take away our freedom to protect us from these wicked, wicked, wicked men. And they are wicked men, no question. But everybody's forgotten we financed both of them for many, many years. And there's some people who think we may still be financing them. I don't know. And, of course, we're not going to get an independent investigation because the president refuses to allow any investigation of what happened last year unless he picks the chairman, unless, of course, nobody on that commission can get somebody to testify. You have to get a majority of the people on the commission to investigate 911 to agree on who the witnesses will be. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? And, of course, it would be very difficult for the American people ever to learn the truth of what really happened on September 11th. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest this evening. But let me remind you of our internet site, radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. Tell others about our internet because that's the easiest way to reach people across America. And we're getting more and more listeners all the time thanks to those loyal people who listen, who copy our programs, who copy our newsletters and get them out across America. And feel free to copy any of the tapes you get from us and duplicate them and help us disseminate them from sea to shining sea. We'll be right back here now with James Wardner. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty and our guest this evening, James Wardner. His two books, The Planned Destruction of America and Unholy Alliances. Is it Unholy Alliances or Unholy Alliance?
Unholy Alliances.
Okay, fine. So it's a plural and you'll find a fascinating, fascinating book. Right now, of course, we've got John's calling us from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hello, it's Dr. Stan, Dr. Wardner. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yes. I was hoping to get your comments on the cover of your trucks phenomenon by the New World Order insiders. You see this through the years. For example, Robert McNamara eventually did do a mea culpa in his book admitting that he gravely mismanaged what turned out to be a no-win Vietnam War. And then you remember that one with the managed media when they finally got around to revealing some of the malfeasance of the Clintons once it was practically impossible to do anything about them, just so they could, the media could keep a little fig leaf of balance and credibility. But the most curious and timely example of cover your tracks is Alan Greenspan. And recently he suggested that maybe we should rethink the gold standard instead of fiat money. What does he know that is there a crash imminent? What does he know that we don't know? Is he saying that maybe fiat money is a bad thing after all?
Well, why don't you? What are your thoughts on that, James? And I'll tell what I think.
Well, anything that comes out of the mouth of Alan Greenspan is, as far as my perspective on it is, it's not even worth listening to because these people don't intend to change anything to the good for those like us. They only think about themselves. They're completely, totally, 100% selfish beings, and they don't have an ounce of charity within them. And so, like the caller said, you know, a fig leaf of truth, a fig leaf of sorrow, all of it meant to confuse, and none of it meant to relieve people's difficulties, people's pain, people's problems. You know, I just heard you say, Dr. Monteith, that you think things are going to go negatively. economically. I know other people who I respect believe the same thing. I certainly don't see any reason to think anything other than that. But I don't see Alan Greenspan or any of the muckety-mucks doing anything positive unless it promotes their own agenda, which is the New World Order, the One World Banking System, the One World Religion, and so on and so forth. That's just my personal perspective. It would take virtually a miracle to change my perspective on that.
All right, John. Well, let me tell you what I think. I think that we're in real trouble. I think that they have decided they're going to destroy the currency. It's the only alternative they have, other than, of course, letting us go into a deflation, which, of course, a contraction, which, of course, would solve the problem, and then we could go back to a gold standard. But a lot of our corporations would go under. An awful lot of people would lose their homes. There'd be rioting in the streets. But, of course, if they destroy the currency, the same thing will happen. Let me point out, if you really want an excellent analysis of this, you want to get my interviews with Bob Chapman, who I am very, very impressed with. He had worked with Gary Allen for many years, and I've talked to a lot of experts on the economy. Not as impressed me as much as Chapman. When I first talked to him about a month and a half ago, he said gold will be up to almost to $350 before the year end. Well, it did hit $350. It backed off. I think it was off $6 or so over the weekend. But he also told me, he said, they put $5 trillion into the national debt. Actually, they put $5 trillion into the economy over the last 3 years. Well, you know, and I said, well, how do they do that? And he said, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I was a little shocked by that statement. But fortunately, my next-door neighbor studies the Fed very closely, and he'd given me all of the figures, and that's absolutely right. They have actually increased the liquidity $5 trillion in 3 years. Now, let me give you a perspective.
Wow.
It took the United States from 1789 to the year 1980. That's almost, 190 years, to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. They put $5 trillion in debt over 3 years, massively increasing the liquidity in an effort to stave off the deflation we're going through now. And I think they're in real trouble. They know they're in real trouble. I think that one reason they want to get us into this war and other wars, and so we'll be focusing on those wars as our financial situation gets worse and worse. Anything else, John?
Well, really briefly, wouldn't you think, Dr. Stan, though, that if things do go south, with my apologies to my beloved friend south of Mason-Dixon line, if things go south, that Alan Greenspan will be able to rescue his sorry reputation by saying, I told you so, we should have gone on the gold standard?
Well, I think what they're going to have to do is massively inflate the economy and to continue inflating at the rate they're going just to try to keep the thing from falling apart, but they're not going to be able to do it. There's too much debt out there.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye. Thanks so much, John. And our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But my next newsletter, my December newsletter, will address all of these things and give you the figures that you need to have. And then if you want to get them verified, why we have all the charts. But I'm not going to bore my readers with these charts, which I have to pore over for 20 minutes to figure out what they're talking about. But the information is there. We've increased the money liquidity $5 trillion over the last 3 years. And the fact that nobody's told us that, and none of the other commentators have told us that, which simply reflects the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. And when you get into a situation like we are today, there are two things you can do. You can do nothing and let the economy contract, and of course it'd be a difficult time for 4 or 5 years, and once you get rid of all the debt, then you can move forward, or you simply keep trying to pour out more and more and more and more money to try to stave off the inevitable. But you can't stave off if it truly is inevitable, and I believe it is, and that is the coming collapse of the monetary system of Western civilization, and really it will eventually at some time be replaced by gold, unless, of course, they go into the cashless society, which is what I think that they intend to do down the line in the name of course, fighting the wicked Saddam Hussein and the wicked Osama bin Laden. Okay, Jim, you pick it up from there.
Well, I'm concerned about the economic situation as well as others. And I know it's a great concern to many people. I have a retired friend. He's in his 80s now, and he was cussing out the Republican administration the other day because his welfare benefits aren't nearly what they used to be. He has less money than he ever has had before. There's less money in the hands of people to be able to spend it even on things they need. You see more and more elderly people working in the grocery stores because we've aborted all the youngest people. And, you know, the difficulty here is that what we're dealing with is a reflection of ourselves, if you will. If it's so hard for us individually, as a family, as an extended family, as a state, as a nation, to look at ourselves in the mirror, as the Bible suggests that we do. Because we are a reflection of the government, or the government is a reflection of us. And essentially, we are a wicked nation, totally corrupt on every front. Just when you think about it, hardly anyone says Merry Christmas anymore. They say Happy Holidays. Well, what has Happy Holiday got to do with anything? Happy Holiday, you could say Happy Holiday for July the 4th. You could say Happy Holiday for Labor Day. Holiday is a day off. This is Christmas. This is the birth of the Messiah. This is the birth of the God-man who died for our sins and bloodied himself on the cross. And nobody has an ounce of respect for God. And God loves you. Jesus loves you. Yeah, so does Buddha. And so does Krishna and everybody else. But the Messiah, the Savior of the world, came as a sweet, loving baby. But the God who will return to this earth will be a God of wrath, and virtually no one will be saved. And that's very clear in the Bible. Was it not for his mercy, not even the very elect would be saved. And so the difficulty that I see here is that we have worries on every front. I'm no different than anybody else, and yet we as individuals, we as families, we as societies, our whole, everything that we know is falling apart. Families are, everyone I know is in the middle of a divorce. Everybody that I know, everybody that I work with, everybody that I work with has been through it, or is going to go through it, or is going through it. The attorneys are getting rich on the destruction of the family. And in my book of The Unholy Alliances, I cover that. That is actually a plan, a planned development of the master planners, of the people who, have been allowed to take great reign in amongst the court system, the educational system. Even the libraries have been vacated of anything Christian, and now they're all New Age books, all occult books, all stuff that would be very disturbing, would have created shock and dismay and probably a good bit of belligerence in parents only 40 or 50 years ago. But they never would have dared do this in my parents' generation, but they're doing it in mine. And of course, I'm getting a little bit older now, so the new parents are 25, 30, 35, and they see no problem in it. The kids are going to public schools, they're learning about evolution. They're going to public schools, they're learning about homosexuality, lesbianism, witchcraft, how to put on a condom. I mean, does not anyone see what is going on in this society? And people who claim to be Christians are allowing their children to go to these refuges of hell and consider that somehow or another these children will maintain some form of Christ-likeness in the future of their lives? It can't happen. It can't happen. And so, you know, we're seeing the destruction of our society financially, but really the soul of America is what's been destroyed.
Who is it who said, vice is a monster of such horrible mien to be hated but to be seen, but seen too often, too familiar with a face, we first endure and then tolerate and then embrace.
That's well said. I don't know who said it.
I think it was Alexander Pope, as a matter of fact. But anyway, it doesn't matter who said it. It's a truism. And, of course, we've come to tolerate this because it's around for so long. And, you know, you turn on television, and where are those wonderful Christmas stories about a babe, being born in a manger, about the three wise men, about the shepherds who, were contacted by the angel in the field by night? And, you know, of course, they're all gone. We don't do that anymore. And we have our television programs, It's a Wonderful, Wonderful World, with Jimmy Stewart, and that's taken the place of the story of the baby in the manger. And isn't it clever how they've done that? How just a little bit each year, patient gradualism that changed the whole outlook for our society. You know, when Elvis Presley first came on the scene, they would never take pictures of him below the waist because of the suggestive gyrations of his pelvis. And now, of course, we take this whole thing completely for granted. I mean, you would never see a woman doing what they do on the stage now, scantily clothed. A Victoria's Secret, their fashion show. I mean, this is just straight pornography, and it's done. They know exactly what they're doing. They're, of course, appealing to the prurient interests of the populace. And, you know, of course, the Muslims say America is a corrupt society. And the Muslims are absolutely right. But of course, where is the organized opposition from the Christian church? Actually, society is a reflection of the church. And look at society today, and then look in the mirror.
Well, again, in Unholy Alliances, I think I cover very well the undermining and infiltration of the church. That the church was infiltrated, the seminaries were infiltrated, the Catholic Church was the Catholic Church. You know, Sun Tzu, that book on how to do war without doing war, and
the Art of War, is it called?
Yeah, the Art of War. It's interesting reading, and of course the ideal is to take over your opposition, but essentially leave it intact, so that you can use your opposition. Well, that is exactly what they did. They did it in the United States of America. They took over the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative branch, leaving people to believe that there still are three different branches of government. There are not. Let me inform your listeners, there are not three different branches of government all balancing one another in the United States of America. That is not existent in the United States today. The other thing that they did is they took over the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is virtually completely infiltrated by Freemasons and members of the anti-Catholic Church who hate the Catholic Church. Yes, they're wearing smocks. Yes, they're cardinals. Yes, they may be saying mass. Yes, they may be marrying people or whatever. Trust me, they have nothing remotely. They have not even remote knowledge of what the true Catholic faith ever was or ever used to be, or even of what various popes said, like Pope Leo XIII, what he said about Freemasonry, or Pope Pius X. Pope Leo XIII said, quote, "Masons teach the great error of this age, that regard for religion should be held as an indifferent matter, and that all religions are alike." Is that not the preaching of this president?
Well, of course, actually, Dr. Warden has sent me a list of a number of cardinals in the Catholic Church who are actually Masons today. And if you doubt that, of course, read the book Windswept House by Malachi Martin, as he was trying to let this out, or get our 4-tape set on Malachi Martin, the wisdom of Malachi Martin. All sorts of fascinating information out there, but of course, a list of the cardinals who are actually Masons. And then it's little wonder that one of the popes said, the smoke of Satan swirls over the Vatican. And this is not to condemn the Catholic faith. I disagree with their teaching, but I'm not saying that they're teaching the Protestant Church is completely right either. But it is to say that the current Catholic Church has been very heavily infiltrated by the forces of darkness, as had the Protestant Church. And it's about time we recognize that and, of course, begin turning back to God. We've got Neil Tuck calling from Kennewick, Washington. Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan and Dr. Warner. I think I took... isn't Dr. Warner put out from the Sons of Liberty?
No, I don't think so, no. Oh. This is the you don't have anything to do with Sons of Liberty, or do you?
No, I don't.
Excuse me.
Okay. That must be somebody else by a similar name.
Oh, okay. But I think I've gotten some of his newspapers. But anyway...
He doesn't have a newspaper.
Oh, he doesn't now?
No, he never has.
It's a different Warner then.
Right.
Okay, I wanted to put another plug in for the Truth and Money book.
Okay.
They have a chapter of why we don't need a gold standard. And, in fact, all the gold in Fort Knox has been turned over to the Federal Reserve private bank.
Of course, right. Well, that's exactly what it says in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. We don't need a gold standard. We've got it all.
They give a brilliant solution to solve this thing, And I'm sure looking forward to your guest Thursday,
okay.
Mr. Phelps.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you, Doctor.
Appreciate you calling. Bye-bye.
Right.
All right, fine. Of course, I do believe that we do need a gold standard. It worked and worked very well. And in my latest newsletter, I address the subject, the protocols, how they were actually written by the occultists as a cover for their activities to try to shift the blame to the Jews for, of course, what was going on. They're an evil document. I don't think you should read them. But I do, of course, quote at least their section on the gold standard in my latest newsletter. That's December newsletter, which is in the process of going out, hopefully before the end of the month. Well, anyway, we've got Ron calling. Hi, Ron. Where are you calling from?
Richland, Washington.
Hi, Richland. Okay, this is the Ron from Richland. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, a couple of things here, sir, just to affirm what your guest is saying about the, you know, the depravity and such and the one world religion and all that. Here in Parade magazine, just this last issue, there was an article, Can't We Get Along?, about this interfaith movement. And, you know, we all more or less believe the same thing.
Well, of course, we can get along, but we don't have to acknowledge that their God is the, we're all worshiping the same God because we're not. I mean, if somebody wants to be a Muslim, I think they have a right to be a Muslim.
Well, certainly.
I have a right to say what I think is wrong with it. But if you are a Christian and you say what's wrong with the Muslims, they'll kill you.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, you know, in Muslim countries, you can't be a Christian. In a Christian country, you can be a Muslim. There is a lot of difference.
Oh, yes. In fact, if you're a Muslim and you start to criticize or stand up for the Christians, you're on the top of their hit list.
Right. Well, of course, the real problem is that America has ceased to be a Christian country because, of course, the Christian church no longer embraces the Christian religion.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I get along with the Muslims very, very well because they know how much I hate our cultures. I hate it even more than they do.
Okay.
I can see how depraved it is, and I'm not hesitant to speak my mind about it. And they are very appreciative of that. They see what it's doing to their country, and it makes them very, very upset.
Right. Well, of course, but the thing is, why aren't the Christians upset about it?
We've been compromised.
And we sure have. Anything else, Ron?
Well, one thing. The Washington Times had an article about the school's cutest couple.
Oh, you mean the lesbian couple, right?
Oh. And some 17-year-old girl was saying, you know, this isn't 1952. We can handle this. What's sin?
I know.
God a liar.
But you see, the thing is, we no longer believe in sin. And as Robert Schuller said, he would never tell anybody they're a sinner because, of course, that would hurt their self-esteem.
Well,
worst thing you could do would be to talk about sin. Hey, we're just about out of time.
They'll call us sinners.
Okay, God
That's
bless you.
That's the biggest new sin. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. We've only got a couple of more minutes, James. What are the messages you would like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, I haven't thought about it beforehand. I think I basically already said it, and I think that caller basically repeated it, Doc. You know, I think that it's, I hate to say it, but we're living at a point in time where it's sort of every man for himself. And I don't mean that, you know, people should run out the back door of the garage and hide in the sand. I just think that individually, men and women, young people have to start standing up for what they believe in this country and take the shots that are going to come. There's just no other way. I mean, the country is essentially it's gone, and it's unredeemable. And probably that's why it will be destroyed, because this country is it's not redeemable anymore. How can it possibly be redeemed? We are worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, we televised Sodom and Gomorrah. They had the inability to do that. You know, it's just I'm so sad over what this country has become. But you still have people who claim to be Christians who are watching television all night, who believe that their belief in Jesus will save them, and yet have done absolutely nothing for the cause of Christ, if not for the cause of Christ, how about the cause of justice? If not for the cause of justice, how about the cause of truth? If not the cause of truth, how about the cause of honesty? Can people not find something worth fighting for? What about your family? What about your children? You know, is there nothing worth fighting for out there except the almighty dollar? Because in America, America's God is money.
Well said, James. Thank you so much for being with us, and God bless you. Have a happy Christmas, a wonderful Christmas season, because, of course, that's the reason for the season. And, of course, as you say, certainly by man's standards, nothing at all could save America. God could. God works differently. But I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe God's wrath is going to come on America as it has on every nation that has turned against him. Our job is to do our best to try to sound the alarm and hope that people out there are listening. And there is a small cadre, a growing number of people. I wish it was in the millions, but at least a few thousand I know that are becoming informed and are telling others. And we're the watchmen, and you're certainly one of the lead watchmen. You've been out there for a long time trying to awaken people. Anyway, hope we can get you back again in the not-too-distant future.
God bless you for your show, and Merry Christmas.
And to you, too. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when we are going to have to ask our listeners up there in the Great Northwest to pray for America, to pray for revival, because if there is not a true revival in America, if the people don't turn back to God, why, God is going to turn his back on this country forever. And then, of course, we ask you to remember in your prayers, my ministry, Radio Liberty, we're on the front lines of this battle. 5 hours every day, 5 days a week, and we have a weekend program that reaches about 35, 36 stations, maybe 37. But anyway, of course, please pray for my ministry, for our provision, for our protection. And of course, we won't be with you tomorrow, so have a wonderful and joyous Christmas, and we'll be back right after Christmas with here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, of course, we ask you to hold your calls for just a few minutes here. We're hoping very, very shortly to have with us on the line our good friend, John Loeffler. But until we get him on the line, why, we're just going to have to tell you about some of the things we talked about earlier today and, of course, how they apply to what's really going on. So I'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan and Chris, you know, there are a lot of unanswered questions. First of all, you know, America is massing a massive force in the Middle East and in Kuwait and other countries over there in preparation for the attack on Saddam Hussein. And, of course, question comes up is, why doesn't Saddam Hussein just surrender? There's no way in the world that he could stand up against this onslaught. Well, there was an interesting article written by Thomas Friedman from the New York Times, and Friedman is certainly one of the insiders who writes on a regular basis for the New York Times. He suggested a possibility, and I hadn't even really considered it, and I don't even know if it is a real possibility, but that we might let Saddam Hussein simply go off into exile in Saudi Arabia or some European country to avoid the war. He might be given, he and his family be given refuge there. And of course, we'd simply, as with Idi Amin, who slaughtered a quarter of a million people in Uganda when he was the dictator there, why we let him live comfortably out the rest of his life in his harem with all of his wives in Saudi Arabia. And we don't talk with righteous indignation about bringing this man, who is really a cannibal. I have a book written by his Minister of Health in Saudi Arabia. It's called The State of Blood, Minister of Health in Uganda. And, of course, he worked very closely with Idi Amin, and he's, quite frankly, he was a cannibal. And he would eat up his foes there, you know, and go into the room with him after they'd been tortured to death and come out licking his fingers, the blood off of his fingers. You know, horrible. How do you understand anything about that? He was just evil, totally evil. And, of course, our good friends, the Saudi Arabians, have given him refuge. So could this happen to with Saddam Hussein? After all, there is no possible way that Iraq can stand up against the force the United States has from a logical point of view, but then there's nothing logical about what's going on in the world today. I mean, we don't have proof of any major weapons of mass destruction. Now, I have no question that Saddam Hussein probably has some, because we gave him all the material. We gave Saddam the chemical and biological weapons back in the 1980s, late 1980s. Anybody who doubts that, you need to get Seymour Hersh's book, Against All Enemies, or the Regal Report, both of which, of course, are available through our ministry. But all of these things, you know, there's no question that he's had them in the past, and I suspect he still has them, but we can't prove he has them. And, of course, he may very well have transferred them all off to Tunisia or to Algeria or to the Sudan, and who knows. But we are going to war, and we're not going to war because Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Well, so does Pakistan. They have the atom bomb. So does India. They have the atom bomb. So does Iran, that has the atom bomb and all the chemical and biological weapons. And they were the ones who have been financing Al-Qaeda all along, they along with the Saudi Arabians. And certainly, if we wanted to go after the people who funded the terrorists who attacked our nation, remember 15 of the 19 of them came from Saudi Arabia, and there's a great deal of evidence that people high in the Saudi government were funding Al-Qaeda. So why didn't we go to war with Saudi Arabia? Now, there's another agenda here, and I'm not certain what it is. And not only that, but the thing that really bothers me, I'm not certain why they have this sense of urgency. I mean, they are doing everything they can to somehow justify going to war. Now maybe, of course, one of our planes will get hit by anti-aircraft missiles over there, or maybe we'll shoot down one of our own planes and blame it on Saddam Hussein. Would our government do something like that? Of course it would do something like that. If you haven't read Operation Northwood, the Joint Chiefs of Staff plan on how they were going to get us into a war with Fidel Castro back in the early 1960s. It's covered in James Bamford's book, Body of Secrets, or certainly you can get it down on the internet, or if you want to, we do have copies of Operation Northwood. You have to understand that these people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to know. And, of course, they are dedicated to going to war. But the question is, why? And so now we have with us John Loeffler from the great state of Idaho, and he's going to answer that question. John, why are we going to war with Iraq, and why is the state of urgency? Why are we so anxious to get into war as soon as we can and start having our boys die?
I don't know. Thank you very much. Good night.
Well, the thing is that obviously it's there. I mean, where is the outcry from the American people? Why are the Christian conservatives going along with this? Have they forgotten what war is? War is brutality. War is force. War is the worst thing in the world. I think it was General Sherman who said, "War is hell. It's only those who've never fought in a war who cry for more blood, more savagery."
Well, you know, we got to the end of the year, and we pre-recorded a lot of our steel shows so we could take some time off. And I've tried to do some more reflecting over the year and try to project the coming year, talk to our contacts in London today and talk with you and other people. And the one impression that we're all coming down before we answer your question is that we see all these things that are sort of waiting to happen, and it's almost like we're being set up for something. Everybody, I described this to my London contact at I Spy magazine, and he said the same thing. He said, the pieces aren't fitting yet, but we keep getting the feeling that something is brewing that we're being set up to accept. That's just it's a premonition or an intuition, I guess, rather than something we can totally verbalize, which is more what you and I think we're going to talk about tonight more was the issue of let's just do some speculating, because look at the blocks that have not been answered. We had 911. Immediately, as you say, suddenly the FBI began showing up at all of these flight schools within hours, Dr. Stan. Now, how, pray tell, did they know what flight schools to go to and who the perpetrators were, when at the moment we didn't even know who the people on the planes were that hijacked the planes? They didn't announce this to air traffic control, so that was that type of thing. And then the whole enemy was Afghanistan and Osama bin Laden, whom Americans did not know, but who the Britons had known very well about. As a matter of fact, I Spy magazine had only had two editions earlier. It was a brand-new magazine that was going to begin dealing with international intelligence for the layman. And by sheer coincidence, and it really was a coincidence, the cover photo of that month for September was Osama bin Laden. And suddenly they got a call in London from New York from a distributor here who said, "We've got to have these. How many copies, can you ship us 50 or 100,000 copies overnight type of thing, because we're going to throw them out on the newsstands." So suddenly it was Osama bin Laden. And then, without warning, we've got to go get Saddam Hussein. And I kept thinking, but we've never established the connection between Osama and Saddam. And you and I both know, we've been around since Desert Storm 1. Every war that we've ever fought under the United Nations, we've lost, including Desert Storm, because we didn't dispossess Saddam Hussein at the time. We've always had lots of our boys get killed, and then we come home with the objectives and goals the American people wanted never being fulfilled, but the objectives and goals of the United Nations being fulfilled, which are always fuzzier and dictated by this dialectical process of covert and constantly rotating politics. So that's where we're at. And the link between the two was never quite solidly explained, except for the fact that there is some evidence linking what happened at the Murrow office building in Oklahoma City to Iraq and to Al-Qaeda that way. But to this day, that has not been established. So here we're rushing into a war. We also know that some of the serious financial pundits are looking down, and I'm not talking about the ones on PMSNBC or places like that, everybody's wondering how the global financial system is literally going to stay up. Greenspan says we're going to burn the currency.
No, Greenspan didn't actually say that, did he?
No, what he means is we're going to burn it, making it worthless.
Right.
We're going to inflate it till our eyeballs pop. We have a debacle going in Venezuela right now, and a large percentage of our oil comes from Venezuela. We are now, Stan, shipping gasoline back to them in tanker ships because they can't even make their own anymore because the refineries are shut down.
No, I think the people have to know there's a general strike in Venezuela because, of course, Chavez, who's the president there, is a hardline communist. And, of course, he's very close to Fidel Castro and the whole world communist movement. And the people there are furious. And he's about ready to declare a dictatorship. And, you know, and, of course, he has the full backing of the Organization of American States, which tells you a lot about the Organization of American States. But there's a general strike. The people are so upset. They've just, everybody's off. And that's why the gasoline oil refineries are shut down.
Right. Ironically, this looks very much like when Pinochet, when they had the coup d'etat, if you recall, or they called it a junta in Spanish. When they had the junta, where Pinochet came to power, because Allende was taking Chile down the very same road that Hugo Chavez is right now. And there's a resurgence of Marxism in Latin America. That's something that, again, the Americans are sort of oblivious to, is this resurgence.
In fact, they just elected a Marxist president in Brazil. I think that's the,
correct,
the largest single government in South America. So,
effectively so. And so it is going to be very difficult. What Americans don't realize is it's going to be very difficult to fight this war in the Gulf without Venezuelan oil. And what the oil experts were discussing, we had some interviews on the Financial Sense News Hour last week. What they are saying is if we interrupt the Venezuelan oil, which it is interrupted, and if we interrupt the Iraqi war even for a few months, the shortages on the world oil market will make prices at the pump soar. You know, we could crack $2 a gallon on upwards of $2.50 easily because people don't understand that we have 30 days worth of oil in the pipeline, and beyond that, there isn't any. Nor are we building new refineries, nor are we building new oil exploration areas. I mean, new pump units and things like that, wells. So that's phase number two of this whole thing. Why are we rushing into this is the question. The only thing that I can see is that we are facing such a dire economic blowout. We need a cover for it, Dr. Stan.
Okay. I mean,
at least that's one strong motivation for prosecuting the war as fast as we are. I mean, let's look at this garbage about inspections in Iraq. Now, you and I both knew that this was going to go down the same trail it did when Richard Butler was head of UNSCOM. This was a given. At the same time, what's also in jeopardy, of course, is what's going on in Israel and in the West Bank, because already Arafat has been telling Osama bin Laden, leave us out of anything you're doing. Don't include us in your cause, because it's looking right now that Sharon is suddenly de-hawking himself. He must be under intense pressure, and we probably have another peace treaty coming out of the Middle East real shortly here. And if we go into Iraq, there are already articles out on the intelligence group. They're expecting non-conventional weapons to be used against Israel. It's going to be a real fun time for the U.S. to sit on Israel enough to say, don't respond.
Well, not only that, but of course, President Bush has threatened that if they do use non-conventional weapons, we're talking about weapons of mass destruction,
right,
you know, over there, that we will respond with nuclear weapons. Now, that to me is a frightening, frightening thing. In fact, they did a poll recently of Americans, and the majority of them said, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and use nuclear weapons. What madness is this?
Right. I mean, this. You know what the biggest problem we have is the last time American boys really got shot up and killed was Vietnam. That's in the memory of my generation and older. The people here, the last Desert Storm, Desert Storm was a big video game. Never mind that 100,000 Iraqis died in the whole operation. We figured that just because a few Americans died, it was a terrific success. But it wasn't really a success because we didn't take Saddam. I have no doubt that we will probably go into Iraq. His military position right now, according to military analysts, is much weaker than it was back then. What everybody needs to understand, too, is that the Middle Eastern mindset is given too easily to what is called hyperbole. In other words, to vastly exaggerating rhetoric, much more so than we in the West are given to. So what he might do, I mean, he's threatening a scorched earth policy. What he might do this time or whatever, the point is there's all sorts of, like I said when I started out, there's all sorts of unanswered, important unanswered questions, the core one being, why are we doing this? and I still don't have it answered in my mind.
And the other question is, why doesn't Saddam Hussein say, all right, let me go and my family, and we'll just pull out of the country and you can have the whole thing. Let's save human lives. And yet, these things are not happening.
Right.
And this would be the logical thing to do to save the human lives. Now, of course, they're talking about, of course, Saddam pulling all of his forces back into the cities so they'd have to fight, door to door. We couldn't use nuclear weapons without killing all the civilians. And then, of course, right now, of course, Egypt is not going to back what we're doing because Mubarak knows that if he was backing us, his people would rise up. I mean, they're furious, intense hatred of Americans there. And the same thing is true with the Saudi Arabians. They wouldn't dare, openly back us because their people would revolt. The same thing is true with Pakistan. I mean, what we're doing is like taking a whole flock of rattlesnakes and begin putting pointed sticks into their eyes. What happens in response? Islamic fundamentalism, this radical form of Islam, which didn't exist until we began to bring it back during the Afghan war, and we began pushing this radical form of Islam and financing and providing textbooks that stimulated and funding these Islamic clerics, and of course right along with Saudi Arabia, creating this whole world fanatical Islamic movement. It is spreading throughout all those countries over there, and they're all scared to death it's going to take over. And, of course, we have a lot of Muslims in this country. Fortunately, most of them are not radical, but some of them are. And, of course, we know that at least according to Joseph Badansky in his book, which incidentally is totally suppressed in America, if you want to study in thought control, try to get a copy of Joseph Badansky's book, Attack on America and the West. It was written in 1993, and I couldn't get a copy except having to go to Great Britain. So somebody bought all these up, and Badansky is, of course, the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Nonconventional Warfare. But he was talking in 1993 about all the Islamic terrorist cells right here in America that Saddam hoped he would be able to mobilize during the first Gulf War, and Iran and Syria wouldn't let him do it. And that's why we didn't have any Islamic reaction at that time. Are we going to really see this? I don't know. Are they trying to scare us to death? The thing that convinces me that they're not is that somebody is actively suppressing Badansky's book, which talked about two things. Number one, the fact that in the early 1980s, they had a base in Iran where they were training people how to hijack our planes, and they had 747s and 707s there, and they were training these Islamic terrorists to hijack American planes and crash them into our buildings. So, but they can't let the American people. We've known that since the early 1980s. And the second thing was the thing about those Islamic terrorist cells that were here, and were here, in the late 1980s, and we did absolutely nothing about them. Now, is that the 1,000 people they rounded up within 3 or 4 days after the terrorist attack? I think a lot of those were part and parcel of those terrorist cells. But, of course, they can't admit this to the American people, that they gave them all the rope that they could possibly use. And then, of course, they took the bait.
And having followed that, now the question is always brings me back to square one, because a lot of us are sitting and looking at all these facts, and we can't quite put it all together. I've noticed that what I call the level of global nervousness is on the rise. Another strange phenomenon that's out there that's unusual is the number of UFO sightings from around the world are skyrocketing upward all of a sudden.
UFO fighting. Now, of course, what you're really talking about is demonic manifestations, or do you think that these are government UFOs?
That's a good question, because I think what UFOs are hyperdimensional issues. I sort of line up with Chuck Missler on that one. I believe they are probably demonic. I never forget the phone call. One of the last times I talked to Malachi Martin before he died was the morning I was sitting in my office, and he called me and said, hi. He always used to call me Johnny in his Irish way. He said, hi, Johnny, it's Malachi. And I said, hi. And he said, I just wanted to tell you to keep your eyes on the skies. And this was in 1998. And I paused, because at that time I was helping Chuck Missler. I was doing some side work for him on his book, Alien Encounters, about the whole issue of what are UFOs, are they real, are they not real, are they demonic, are they real aliens? And I said, well, are we talking about aliens or whatever? And he says, yes. I said, what you're telling me is something is going to be staged. There are also rumors, we talked to some contacts again in London, there's a magazine there called UFO Magazine. Sometime in this coming year, a big scandal will erupt about NASA, and there will be a, how do I describe it, a major reorganization of NASA. We will suddenly discover that NASA knew a bunch of stuff about something that will cause some kind of an ongoing scandal. That's what's going around on the intelligence circuits right now. Like I said, tonight we're just sort of speculating and getting pretty far out over the edge. Some nights we try to stay pretty close in with the facts, you know. But the UFO sightings, at least UFO Mag says, they're drowning in phone calls from people around the world reporting this, much higher than the normal level. And I asked Chris Monday over at iSpy magazine, and I said, well, what about crop circles? He said, the crop circles are appearing on a regular basis in Great Britain, mostly in the southwestern part of the country. And I said, you know what's amazing is we have these mysterious crop circles, incredible mathematical and religious type of symbols forming almost on a daily basis, and everybody goes on with life as if nothing unusual were happening.
I know, and Chris, the thing is, then they're going to try to tell us you've got these half a dozen people out there, you know, they got a rope and they're running around a circle making these perfect, you know, these perfect patterns that, you know, it looks like some from the sky, like some sculpture had done them.
Right, and that's impossible because of the nature of the way how these things are. A rope being dragged will not do that. These stalks are actually being bent over as if they were like candle wax melted and then cooled again in the new position. And if you were to drag a rope to do that, it would bend the things. Plus, these things form literally within seconds. When people are there, there's a flash of energy or light, and suddenly these things are here. Now, you have to answer the question, what are they? We don't know. I just know that we have that. They said this whole new series by Steven Spielberg, you know, Taken, that aired over here last week. I watched part of it on one of the cable channels, and it'll be aired in the UK in January, and Chris said that's the quickest they've ever managed to get anything over here, you know, from the U.S. onto British television. I thought that was interesting. See, some things are, you know, there are conspiracy things out there. There are other things that are what I call coincidences from a human level that are probably being orchestrated at a deeper spiritual level. And what I have noticed is the level of global nervousness is rising. People are just nervous. And it's not really the war on terrorism. The war on terrorism, I'm going to predict, will only turn out to be about a fourth of the whole issue. So whatever it is, we seem bound and determined to get this war done and over with. And it's for a purpose that I can't fathom yet. I think there are all sorts of peripheral issues. I can't go any deeper than that. I don't know.
Well, I talked this morning to a gentleman I've interviewed in the past from Washington, D.C., who has strong ties with the Pentagon. And I asked him, I said, well, the same question I asked you, why the urgency? Why? And he, of course, he says that he has no idea. But he is aware of this. It's very, apparently, the people in the Pentagon are very unhappy about this war, at least in the military aspect of it, because their people are going to get killed. The Air Force doesn't care so much because their people are not going to get killed. But, of course, the grunts on the ground, the squadron leaders, the platoon leaders, I mean, these are the ones going to bear the brunt of this, and whatever happens, it could be a very, very bloody encounter, especially if Saddam does what he's promised to do, scorch the earth, pulling everything back in the cities, door-to-door fighting. And will the Iraqis fight? Well, of course, I think they're trying to convince us they won't. I hope and pray that they don't. I wish Saddam Hussein would say, it's all over, I'm going to go, give me a couple of $1 million, and I'll leave. This would be the best of all solutions. But obviously, well, we're just going to have to wait and see. But, you know, what you're really talking about are demonic manifestations, increased UFO sightings. In fact, you know, back in one of my favorite places, the Georgia Guidestones there in Elberton, Georgia.
Right.
And, of course, when I went to the library there, and they have all the clippings from Elberton, and there were clippings about UFOs hovering over these demonic guidestones there, this area, this occult site there in Elberton, Georgia. And so the UFOs are out there. I believe that they are demonic I believe that there's a lot of effort to confuse us about it, and maybe that we have some technology, but we do not have this interdimensional technology that you're talking about. But of course, for the average individual to believe that there really are demonic forces out there, truly are alien abductions where they do all these bizarre sexual experiments on people, why should we think that's strange? We go back and we look at the story of the time of Noah, where there were Nephilim, there were demonic, the offspring of these demonic beings who were mating with women. Oh, it's like deja vu all over again. And what was it that Christ said? When they asked him, what will be the signs of my coming? It'll be as it was in the days
of Noah.
It
was in the days.
I'll tell you what, the more I see what's going on today, I can see Satan's hand, I can see God's hand in everything that's going on. Fortunately, we have the consolation knowing that God certainly is far more powerful than Satan, but he's allowing these things to take place. He's testing the Christians and the Christian church at this time, and I fear that many will be found wanting.
Wanting, yeah. No, I can see that. One of the interesting conclusions that everybody, I remember the researcher Jacques Vallée, after whom the Frenchman in Alien Encounters was, what was the movie? First Close Encounters was patterned. In his writings, came to the same conclusion. He said, whatever these things are, so they're not from outer space, they seem to be hyperdimensional, and he said they have a seething, hating hostility towards mankind, and are almost obsessed with human reproduction.
He was a UFO expert and wanted somebody to study it for a long time.
Right. Jacques Vallée.
Right. In fact, he wasn't even a Christian, was he?
No.
And I think really what's so interesting about that, there's a book called Above Top Secret, which I just picked up in a store one day and started looking through it. And the foreword was written by the head of the British Air Force, Field Marshal or whatever you call him, Air Marshal. And, of course, he was simply writing about UFOs. And he says, I have access to all of the various secrets, of the Air Force, American. And he said, if we had this technology, I would know about it. And then he listed what this could be, and the thing that struck me, he said, the only conclusion I can come to is these are metaphysical.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the only conclusion you can reach in the whole thing, but of course then people tend to poo-poo that. There are pastors even poo-pooing what Chuck and Dr. Missler and Dr. Eastman had written in there when they did Alien Encounters, but they did a pretty good job of researching, and that was the conclusion they came down to. They said when you sit and look at the evidence, and of course that's what Chuck always does, is he looks at evidence, not at what is politically correct. And it's very hard on either side. The same thing you mentioned earlier in the broadcast that bothers me is, for all of the years, have you noticed that the steam has gone out of some of the so-called conservative media after Bill Clinton left office? Because once President Clinton wasn't ousted, but once he was retired from office, they didn't have anything else to bash on. They had sort of built their reputation investigating, what that was going on in the in those circles there. And once that was gone, they didn't have anything to do. And so the problem is that that's because they didn't understand. I spent very little time on the Clinton administration on my radio show, and we were on the air for all 8 years of the Clinton administration. And I think I spent less than four shows looking at avoided the Levinsky scandal, because all of those were really sidebars to the core issues that were going on. But all during this time, we heard about the conservatives, about support for homeschoolers and this and that, and the founding fathers and whatever. What has absolutely flabbergasted me is that the conservative right has been so willing to throw the Constitution to the wind, Dr. Stan, in the name of fighting this war on terrorism. I've just been absolutely aghast at the whole thing. You would think this crowd, understanding where we came from and why the Bill of Rights is in place, would be the first to stand up. And indeed, the true hard conservatives on the right and the libertarians, the real conservatives, have been questioning it, along with people like the ACLU and the others on the left. And that's why I think Jack McManus just came out with his new book, William F. Buckley, Pied Piper for the Establishment. You got your break there.
Right. We'll be right back with John Knopfler as soon as we return from the break. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind those of you out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and of course, hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, and on 50 stations across America every week, reaching out with the news, behind the news, the story behind the story. So we hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we do every day on 5 hours on radio, 5 hours on the internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave, as we try to get people listening. And our listening audience is growing, and that's really what's so encouraging. But of course, as we go into more and more stations, the expense of that is expensive as well. So if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that they're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, educational battlefield, why consider seriously joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, our September newsletter dealt with certainly the implications of the attack on the World Trade Center the previous year. Our October newsletter was Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and amazingly enough, why, of course, hardly anybody in the media picked it up, and yet, of course, his shocking revelations and really a very, very touching testimony by a very courageous lady whose husband died in the South Tower. So we've included that in our October newsletter, our November newsletter, as sort of an overview of what's going on and beginning to understand the implications of a fiat money system. Our December newsletter, of course, will have some really, I think, very, very shocking overviews of what's happening, and of course suggestions of what you've got to do in preparation for what lies ahead. And so if you'd like a free copy of one of those newsletters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then of course go to our website at radioliberty.com. Feel free to take down our newsletters and copy them. Feel free to certainly get our information, our tapes, copy the tapes, copy any of our videos. Help us to get the truth out across America, because without knowledge, this country will die. And maybe it's going to die anyway. But we have an obligation to do everything we can, because there are an awful lot of good and wonderful people here, and there are an awful lot of people who love the Lord, but I fear that they're being misled by false teachers who will not address the issues, who have far more fear of government than they have of God, and are certainly preaching a socially responsible gospel, but not the gospel of Jesus Christ. We'll be back in just a moment with John Leffler. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, of course, if you want to reach my ministry, it's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because, indeed, we are at war today. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we've been talking about, and I think it's really so interesting that John has pointed out that certainly over in England and throughout the world, they're having more and more UFO sightings, much more than ever before. That there are more crop circles there, and you know there are all sorts of manifestations of this evil. There are these animals that are being slaughtered, and but they're not there to take the meat off the animals. They're simply to cut off their genitals and take their blood and certain things from the animal, but they leave the animal. These are not rustlers. It's something very, very strange. And, of course, I mean, there are so many manifestations of this demonic goings-on. I mean, there are children disappearing in America almost on a daily basis that are never, never found. And, of course, people who are involved with the occult will tell you that, you know, if they've come out, that these children are being sacrificed in America today. And yet, of course, they have a division in the FBI, and their purpose is, of course, to discourage anybody who believes that there's a satanic conspiracy out there. There's a wonderful book called Painted Red I read some years ago by a college professor who studied this. And one of the greatest impediments to people understanding the satanic nature of the things that are going on in America today is, of course, our own government officials. Now, some of our local police forces have divisions that deal with satanic ritual crimes. But, you know, at the national level, they do everything they can to play it down. Why? Because the forces of evil are working right in our nation's capital today. In fact, during the Hillary Clinton's time in the White House, I have friends who had documentary evidence of witches' covens meeting there, and this one person who was going to write about it was told, if you dare to write about that, you will never live. They will kill you and your family, and that was enough to discourage her from doing the article. Could do things like that happen here in America? Well, I know an awful lot of people have met some very, very strange demises, especially people who've written books about what we're talking about, and of course really exposed what's going on. People like Stephen Knight in England, who wrote extensively on the Masonic conspiracies over there, the Brotherhood, and he wrote on Jack the Ripper, and suddenly he dies at a very young age. Jim Keith over here, dying at a young age, and do these things happen? Of course they happen. I even talked to L.D. Brown, who was hired by the CIA to kill a man he was told was a drug pusher. It turned out it was a man named who had actually written a book called Compromised, a book on George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton. And so these things actually go on. Terry Reid was the man that L.D. Brown was supposed to kill. And I've talked to LD about it. He won't go on the air now. Whether he's been threatened or what it is, I don't know. But he did do a number of interviews where he readily admitted what had gone on. He's lucky to still be alive. Well, anyway, John, you know, for the average individual out there, they find these things hard to believe. That sounds like X-Files. But, you know, it's much more than X-Files. There really is, the truth really is out there. They certainly are covering up the truth, and they've hidden the truth in plain sight, and it should be so obvious to what's going on, and yet the average person can't see it or doesn't want to see it or nobody's pointing their attitude towards it. In fact, I'll never forget, you know, for years I looked at those statistics on the incidence of AIDS in what was known as the San Francisco cohort, a group of, I don't know, 400 or 500 homosexual men who were recruited to take a hepatitis B vaccine to find out if it would cut down on the incidence of AIDS, because incidence of hepatitis B, and I read that, and 80% of those young men who took the vaccine to prevent hepatitis B ended up getting AIDS. And I thought, gee, boy, they've really got to be promiscuous. Boy, it's got to spread like wildfire. And it took me years before I suddenly looked at those statistics and said, 80% of the young men who took the hepatitis B vaccine contracted AIDS, and the general population of promiscuous homosexuals, less than 40%. There was something in the vaccine.
There had to have been that level of, just on statistical correlations.
Right, but nobody has ever talked about that.
Right. Nobody
was a fellow named Strecker, Dr. Strecker. I talked about it. I used to think he was crazy. And now, of course, I'm afraid he was not.
Well, the hard part that we have with government here, as I've always said, I'm not anti-government, I'm pro-accountable government, is that what has happened is various wings of governments, not just ours. I mean, this, you read the same stuff going on in Great Britain about what MI5 and MI6 are up to, etc., are beginning to act with little oversight and little accountability. And whenever that happens, all sorts of mischief cuts loose, and that's what we're seeing happen. The problem that Americans have is the fact that our system of government has worked so well for so long, they have forgotten that our system of checks and balances and everything is not the norm, but rather a fluke in the history of the world. That's important to realize. And that's why we have so many humanist types, I'm going to use that loosely, running around thinking that mankind is innately good. They forget that the majority of human history is a tragic lesson of blood and guts and abuses and one group of people dominating another and everything else like that. That is the norm of history. And goodness is not the norm of mankind. It's just the opposite. And so when they tell them this stuff, they still got the image. It's like when somebody says public education, for example. Well, you know, public education, when you and I went to school, was a pretty decent establishment. But the same term, public education, no longer refers to a quality education. It can't. because that whole thing has changed. And that's what you're facing, as I've said before, in a lot of cases, it is not that we don't have a problem or a recognition of an attack that's coming on us. It's not that we don't even have a solution. It's that you can't convince the people under attack that there's a problem. And you spend 98% of your energy trying to convince them that there is something to react to. And by the time they get it, it's all over with.
Well, you know, there are an awful lot of people who have their children going to government schools who are saying, well, they're getting a good education. I mean, my boy's getting a straight B's or straight A's. But, of course, they don't understand, you don't have to be very smart to get straight A's in the schools today, because, of course, they've dumbed down the test. They've dumbed down the educational process. And, you know, of course, Jay Leno has all these programs on, and I hate to recommend Jay Leno at all, but, you know, once in a while, I'll tune on, and he'll have all these young people that they've gotten off the streets, and they ask him, you know, like, who wrote Handel's Messiah? They can't figure that out, you know. It's just they thought maybe it was Irving Berlin or something like that, or Elvis Presley. You wonder, I mean, if you look at the geography studies, you know, there are about 25% of students in American schools who couldn't identify the United States on the map.
Right.
You know, how could you do that bad a job unintentionally? But so the average individual really doesn't understand what they've done to the educational process. And we're an education where the kids know more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, where they know more about Marilyn Monroe than they know about mathematics.
And
they know sure a lot more about death and death education than they do Dostoevsky. We're in real trouble. And the parents don't understand, because, you know, if they accepted that, they would have to accept their responsibility for the education of their children, because God gave the children to the parents, not to the state. And they don't want to be involved. They don't want to have to put out the money for a private school or have a mother give up the job and stay home and homeschool the children, because they want to live the good life with the two cars and the boat and the summer home and all these things and the travels. And they don't want to have to accept that they have to be involved in life.
Right. There's also what I call the law of declining remembrance, and that is, you and I remember what a good didactic education has been about. But starting in the late 50s and early 60s, education made its first profound shift from teaching facts to beginning to experiment with the views of B.F. Skinner and Maslow and Rogers and Bloom's taxonomy, which every teacher goes through even today, to the point that about 50% of the focus of curriculum, and you can find this in the literature where they say, the focus of education is no longer teaching facts or history or things. And if they had our choice, we would relegate that to about a quarter of the school day, rather than the rest of it would all be devoted to psychological counseling and this and that. But the first decline you see in the results of education combined with, and it produced, the decline in morality, because it was not being taught in the schools traditionally as the parents would teach it, began in the 60s. Now, today's parents that you're talking about are themselves the product of a dumbed-down education. I've made an interesting comment. Stupid people don't know that they're stupid. And that's because they don't know what it was like. They don't know what they should know. And because they don't know what they should know, they don't know what it is their kids should know. The other thing that's happened, as you well know, and I think you just mentioned it, has been the fact that the curriculum over the last 40 years has been systematically dumbed down, as has the SAT test been. In other words, the SAT tests every 5 years approximately have been renormed to the new textbooks as the textbooks come out. Well, this isn't difficult to follow, because if you go back and check the textbooks themselves have been dumbed down, so therefore the SAT tests have to be dumbed down to fall into the norms, whatever. What is an A grade today would probably have been a C- just 40 or 50 years ago. So you bring up the next point. Remember, we talked about this mix of issues that are confronting us now as we roll into this next year, and this one concerns me. I spend a lot of time talking to young people, especially those that are operating things at the counter, you know, the checkout people, etc. And I've discovered the same thing. They don't know anything, Dr. Stan. they don't even know how to think and reason their way through it. So in essence, as I said before, they're really intelligent, but to a large degree, as from a knowledge base, they're very stupid. The second thing Americans have forgotten is how we got where we are. We have completely, systematically destroyed in the public education system a knowledge of our history as a great nation, with all of its faults and all of its strong points. We have had socialism and Marxist ideas substituted for free market and capitalist ideas. So what we have now is a group of dialectically educated people who worry more about how they feel about something than what they know. What they don't understand is this crowd is totally malleable. They are the biggest crowd of sheep that there could ever be. And in a time of panic, all they want to do is get back to the good life, or whatever their life was. Concepts of dedication, duty, honor, long-sufferingness, sacrifice are lost on large quantities of this generation. And so that's why we're even in more danger, I think, as a society and a culture. I wish I were more sanguine on this. I've tried to be. But I can't shake this overarching premonition. And this includes even children coming out of private schools to a large degree. The churches have fallen down. As cultural and religious crisis after crisis rolled through the culture in the last 40 or 50 years, the church just sort of simply watched it roll through. And even to date, the youth pastors in the church have a very difficult time figuring out what it is they're going to do with the youth that are in their charge. You remember the old quote of the humanist, and I wish I had the quote right in front of me, what can the pastors and the Sunday school teachers and the parents do when we have their kids for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week? And that's what the humanists were saying already in the 30s and 40s. They knew that they could re-indoctrinate a nation. They set out to do that using the public education system, and they succeeded in doing it. So now this crowd is incapable of thinking their way through situations, thinking what we would call didactically, reasoning their way through. They're just concerned about how they feel. And how they feel is usually how they have been programmed to feel by the latest political correct thought. Now, that can change from moment to moment. In essence, what we are facing is an overall mob situation. There are exceptions, all right? But even the intelligent people out there, I find, have a tremendous lack in their knowledge base, especially everything from the baby boomers on backwards, you know, and later generations, Generation X, and I call it Y, Z, and dumb. And I wish you were more sanguine, but I just don't see the evidence of it, Dr. Stan. And I live in a very conservative part of the country where you would think, where we do have a large homeschool population here. I find the homeschool children and a lot of the private school kids are pretty sharp. They seem to understand. They can think clearly. You put them up against the government school-educated children, and it's a no contest. But what everybody doesn't realize is that that's where we're at. That's why, you see, we don't even have very many teachers today in the system who remember what it was like in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. These were referred to by the education idealists as defective teachers because they didn't want to go along with the new, quote, progressive, end quote, education, which in reality was regressive education. As Francis Schaeffer once pointed out, this is nothing new. We've been here before. It was called the Soviet Union.
Well, I think, you know, it's really so interesting that this new program that the our president has put in, you know, is basically the socialist program. And in the name of really a returning control of education to the local school boards and to the parents, the reality was, of course, it was to centralize all education with Washington, D.C., and then to use, of course, the federal grants to test children to make sure they were getting the proper education. But their concept of proper education, as you said, was to change attitudes and beliefs and values, and attitudes towards God and family and country, towards diversity, towards our Constitution. They teach the Constitution. They just teach a different brand of the Constitution. They teach the Bill of Rights, but they exclude the Second and Tenth Amendments to the Bill of Rights, because those are archaic. And basically, what they're doing is indoctrinating our children in the fact that the Universal Bill of Rights put out by the United Nations is really far better than the American Bill of Rights. We're going to teach the American Bill of Rights and the Universal Bill of Rights, and then we're going to convince the children that, of course, the United Nations ideas are better than ours. And this is being put over by George W. Bush,
right,
who ran as a Christian president and promised he was going to return control to the local community, and then he backed the Kennedy educational bill. Now, why would Teddy Kennedy back anything that would be beneficial to the Christians, to excellence in education? Because Ted Kennedy is a dedicated socialist. He's a very evil man. Well, I think that all we need to do is understand that our president backed Ted Kennedy's program. Why would he do such a thing?
Right, and this whole program, you know, people don't like to think of agendas, but most of this program was outlined at the 1989 Governors Conference, which took place in Kansas. You know, the keynote speaker there was Dr. Shirley McCune, who is now an assistant to the head of education for the state of Washington in Olympia, Washington, in which he said the whole purpose of education is no longer the teaching of facts. That should be only a quarter of the day. And they laid out the plan for education. It was going to be a womb-to-tomb education system in which basically everyone would be numbered and databased. You would be tracked. And about 50% of this, bear in mind, which it is today, according to the tests that are going in now, track the students' politically correct attitude. Their whole careers would be tracked. They would have to be constantly re-educated as they went from job to job. And the whole thrust of education would be shifted from learning facts and history and things to rather teaching, selecting career paths for the students and teaching them only what it was deemed by the elitists they needed to learn. And say, for example, you wanted to be a doctor, but if they've already exceeded their quota for doctors, you would not be allowed to pursue a course to become a physician or something like that. Now, that was the agenda that was laid out, or it first came to the surface there, in 1989. Here we are 12 years later, and by breaking this agenda up into various pieces called outcome-based education, Goals 2000, School to Work, which were all debated individually without being able to be seen from the overall viewpoint, this whole agenda has been laid in place. So much so now that the new NAEP test, the National Association of Education Progress, it's approximately 50% of the content and analysis on that test is designed to evaluate the students' and the teachers' psychological profiles and attitudes. In other words, the teachers will now be graded based on the outcomes of their student, and the Kennedy-Castlebaum bill made it a felony for anybody to tell someone else the questions that are on the test. So they don't want parents to be discussing the questions that are on this test.
Well, they don't want parents to realize that the purpose of George Bush's educational system is not to teach facts or reading or writing arithmetic. It is, as I said earlier, to change attitudes and beliefs and values.
Beliefs and values,
and
correct.
And their attitudes towards God and family and country. Actually, have you seen Alan Crisp's great new little book, Fed Ed?
No.
It's well worthwhile. Do you know Alan?
No, I don't.
Well, I'll talk to him about off the air. But he's with the Minnesota Maple River Educational Association.
Yeah, Mr. Edco, yeah.
Mr. Edco, and he's written a wonderful book. It really is. Phyllis Schlafly in the foreword said, this is one of the most important books of modern times. Well, you know, it sounded really pretty good. You know, I thought, sure, one of the best books of modern times, yeah. But I read the book, and he's done a magnificent job, and you'll enjoy talking to him. And he's simply gone through all the laws, he's gone through the textbooks, he's gone through the tests, and he shows you exactly what they're doing. And, of course, they just don't want the American parents to know what it's all about, especially not if they are George Bush supporters. If George Bush would betray our children with this program, what would he do with the boys he's sending over to Iraq? Because it's all one ball of wax. I mean, you can't separate their policies on education with this nonsensical war coming in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, and my question is, I don't understand where the conservative right is, where the religious right is. Where are all the organizations?
Oh, you know, it's very interesting. I'm having a man named Robert Levy on, who was with the Cato Institute. He wrote an article in the Washington Times, sounded just like you and me. So I schedule him, and of course, as you often do, you chat a little bit beforehand, and he's doing quite a bit of radio, and he says he goes onto these radio programs, and they're all debates. Everybody's out to get him. And these are conservative Christian programs. I don't know whether he's Christian or what, where he's coming from, but he's certainly coming from the libertarian point of view. And they're all out to challenge him. I mean, why are you so upset? I mean, we've got to fight terrorism. We've got to take away all of our freedom. And we've got to have the USA Patriot Act and the Office of Homeland Security and the TIPS program. And we've got to have, video cameras on every corner, you know, and the facial profiling and everybody, under DARPA being regulated and regimented and watched. Because we got to back the administration, our president, in protecting us from Osama bin Laden and his wicked followers. He said, I just don't understand. I think we got a real problem when the Christian conservatives are backing George Herbert Walker Bush, who was intent upon taking us into war, and of course ran under the with all these promises, and then of course look what he's done as far as education. Because education is the key to the next generation. And, of course, his goal is to carry out Ted Kennedy's program.
Well, and we're self-destructing as a country, you're right. We have done more to demolish the Constitution under the Republicans in the last 20 years than under the Democrats. That's been my very sober observation after watching other things. Not only are they not there... Well, John McManus just wrote a new book, William F. Buckley, Pied Piper for the Establishment. And the thesis of the book is that a number of people were injected into the conservative movement to form what is called neoconservative movement, which is really liberalism in a different cloak. And he makes his case very well.
And of course, William F. Buckley, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, member of the Skull and Bones, certainly...
And he lists all of the causes that William F. Buckley, the supposed conservative and, of course, host of the PBS series Firing Line for many, many years, supported. And it turns out they're all very liberal, very, anti-conservative, anti what you would call free market capitalist type of agendas. And then what happens is, this is an old technique, by the way. This was done with churches behind the Soviet Union, the Iron Curtain, and they would take what they call model churches and hold these up to the Western world and say, see, we don't persecute Christians. Why, look, Pastor Huffenpuff over here is falling in line and obeying the state, and he has his congregation there. These ones that aren't cooperating today are these renegade Christians, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the problem, is we're doing it. So they pick token conservatives and then use them as the straw man against which to bounce so-called conservative issues. The people who are really called really conservatives are called extremists.
As they used to say over there in the Soviet Union, you'd see all these Greek Orthodox priests with their long beard, but of course when they went home, they took the beards off.
Right, and they were all KGB.
In fact, the head of the Greek Orthodox Church in Russia today is a KGB agent, as are most of the priests, Dr. Wilkie.
So you mean the Russian Orthodox Church.
Russian Orthodox,
yeah,
I'm sorry. Right. Okay, we're out of time. God bless you, John.
God bless.
Have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas, and we'll look forward to talking to you afterwards and give our best to Carol and the kids.
Will do. Merry Christmas.
And you too. Bye-bye. All right, so this is Dr. Stan, and let me wish everybody out there in the audience a Merry Christmas. We won't be with you tomorrow evening, but we'll be back the day after Christmas. And so until then, may the Lord be with you.
hope the people out there enjoy it. Chris Young's always interesting. James Warden's always interesting.
Washington crowd kept going up.
Yeah.
Don't run off. I need to catch you before you go.